All right. So, Matt, I'm trying to work on myself and, become better. So, I'm going to work on being less condescending. Condescending means talking down to people. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm not doing too bad, man. How are
good.
You?
Good. Good. I'm surviving. It's been busy, but I'm surviving. So as we tell you all the time, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. We have multiple different levels, and we have a huge back catalog of episodes that we've been doing for years that on our dark weeks, when we're dark, I know I see comments all the time. Why are you dark? I'm caught up. I need a new episode. If that's the case, Patreon is for you.
That's right.
We have bonus episodes on there. We have videos on there. We have ad-free stuff, depending on the level you pick. And if you're a $10 a month patron, you get our second show, Side Quest, that is totally different than Graveyard Tales. So you can get me and Matt in a different setting than you get on Graveyard Tales, where we don't censor ourselves on Side Quest.
No, we do not. And we've got a fun one we're going to be doing tonight.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to doing that. We always do the Side Quest later, like at the end of the night. And so you get more of a goofy version of me and Matt because we're tired. Also, we mentioned this before, but send in your listener stories for our listener stories episode. And it's the deadline is going to be here before you know it. So if you want to get your story on our annual listener stories episode, please send it in and title it listener stories or stories 2025 or something, so that when I'm looking through our hundreds of emails a day, I can find it and save it. The sooner you send it in, the earlier it will go on the episode. So if you want to hear it early on, send it now, get it in early. But also go over like down in our show notes and you can find our sponsors for every episode. If our episode is sponsored, then you can help us out. If you say, hey, I can't become a patron, I don't have the money, but I want to help you guys out, then you can do that by using the links that we provide for our sponsors. Because when they sponsor an episode and you use the code, they will come back.
Right.
And they will sponsor us again and continue to help the show. So, Matt, on that note, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So tonight we're talking about another haunted place, another haunted asylum. Pretty creepy. A lot of history, a lot of angst.
Yeah.
Emotion. Yep. Kids, it's just, it's rough. Tonight, we're going to talk about the Crescent Sanatorium.
Right.
And this place is, just looking at it gives you kind of a weird feeling. The craziest thing about it is, well, it didn't close till 1996 or something.
Stayed open a long time.
It's much more modern than a lot of the other quote unquote haunted asylums that we look at.
Yep.
They've been abandoned for 50 years or something. I mean, this one is, fairly modern. It went up, into the present day. So, that gives it a little bit of a twist, I guess. So, it's a little bit different than some of the other places we've talked about.
Yeah. And like you were saying before, we turn the mics on, there are people who were at this sanatorium that are still alive today.
Oh, yes.
That's how modern day it is.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about that before we get into the hauntings too. So,
yep.
it's pretty fascinating.
It really is. But before we get into it, we'll say go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about is referenced and sourced in our show notes. So since Matt and I can't get to, I mean, if we were going to every place we talked about, we would have no life, Matt. We would just, we would go right to this place and then put an episode about it and then go to the next place. So we have to draw our information from people who went to these places and the information that was written while it was in operation, because I'm not going to be able to get back to the early 1900s. It's just, we haven't created time travel yet. So we have to source all of our information from different sources, and we put all of those in our show notes. So you can go down there and check it out. Now, Crescent Sanatorium, also called the San, which is interesting to me that it's, this feels like it's so infamous that it got that nickname. Because we've talked about a lot of sanatoriums and asylums in the years that we've been doing this, but they don't normally come up with a nickname for it like the San.
Right.
So it just immediately, right off the bat, something feels different about this sanatorium. Now, it's in Crescent, Pennsylvania, and it was established due to the efforts of philanthropist Andrew Carnegie. He sold 500 acres of land for just $1 on the condition that it be used to create a tuberculosis treatment center. So, you know, I would love to have enough money and land that I could sell 500 acres for a dollar.
And so many of these places started like that, like as a tuberculosis hospital.
Yep, it did. It's, it's funny you bring that up, because the next thing I've got is in 1900, there were 34 sanatoriums in the whole of the continental United States. By 1925, there were 536. So in 25 years, 502 sanatoriums were built just in that. That seems very quick to put up that many sanatoriums. Now, the Crescent Sanatorium was one of the earlier ones to get built, because construction on it began in 1912. And the sanatorium actually opened in 1913. So the location that it was built on was specifically chosen for its fresh mountain air, which was a common treatment strategy for tuberculosis at the time. And the institution quickly became a refuge for those suffering from the disease. The facility's architecture reflected European influences, and it actually honored Carnegie's Scottish heritage. So it had crests and decorative stonework and stuff like that when it first opened. There were 20 cottages with 4 open pavilions that were completed in June of 1913. So these gave a living space for the healthier TB patients. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had TB, but you weren't bedridden or real bad off, you could have one of these cottages to get the benefits of the fresh mountain air, but you weren't stuck in like a hospital room or something. Now, as more patients began to arrive, more buildings had to be built. So in 1914, the chapel was built. The west wing, containing the men's hospital and an addition to the dining building, were also constructed. The addition to the dining building added more kitchen and dining space, as well as quarters for nurses. So they built it, but then they had to quickly add on and keep building, because so many people had TB and were coming to the sanatorium that they were running out of room. Now, tuberculosis at the time was a widespread and deadly threat. So Crescent Sanatorium became one of Pennsylvania's largest and most important centers for long-term care and isolation of patients. At its peak, it treated more than 40,000 people, Matt.
Man, that's a lot.
It is. It's a ton. Now, the complex housed a variety of specialized buildings, you know, like the chapel that I mentioned, but also schoolhouses for children. It had recreation halls, nurses' residence, and later introduced innovations like x-ray equipment and surgery facilities. So they were building on and really, really building up the Crescent.
Mm-hmm.
So the San, as it was known, like I mentioned, also had its own graveyard on the property for people who died in isolation. Now, in 1921, more cottages went up as well as a playhouse for children. And that's something to keep in mind. There were a lot of children that were at this sanatorium. At one time, there were more than 250 children that were living at the San. So they built a couple of schoolhouses, a garage, and a large hall for entertainment were also constructed. Now, the coming of the 1930s brought new advancements in the treatment of TB, and these new advancements inspired new construction. There was a surgical suite that was added, but then World War II happened and stopped construction for a few years. But then once supplies were available again, more additions were added to the building. Now, I mentioned the elevation, you know, and the isolation. It was built high in the Allegheny Mountains at around 2,000 to 2,500 feet in elevation so that you got the fresh, clean mountain air. There were a bunch of buildings, like I said, so it had a large open layout to it. And it also had a farm, a dairy, poultry houses, a power plant, and it was relatively self-contained so that it could support a bunch of patients and staff over extended stays. Now, some patients actually stayed for years because TB treatment took a long time, and relapse or very slow recovery was also common. So I mentioned the children. There was a children's department because there were so many children among these patients. So they had their own ward, basically. Now, on one hand, the isolation from the general population and family was hard, but patients said they created their own communities among themselves. The staff lived on site, and the institution was designed to feel less like a prison and more like a place of rest and recuperation, but it had its limitations. And the prison part is funny, and we'll talk about why here in a second. Now, we've covered a lot of TB wards in our episodes, and they seem to hold a lot of energy and spirits, but we've never really talked about how they treated TB prior to the sanatoriums and afterwards. So before sanatoriums in the mid-1800s and before, there was really no effective treatment. It was, at the time, often called consumption, and it was poorly understood. You know, you can watch old Westerns and stuff, and they'll call it, oh, he's got the consumption and stuff like that. And that's what they're talking about.
TB. Yeah, you always remember hearing he died of consumption. And I was like, what the heck was that?
Yep. And it's because of what it did to your body. Most doctors, though, believe that it was hereditary and it wasn't contagious, which is a weird thing. But they had home remedies and folk cures at the time. So there was herbal teas and tonics, and cod liver oil was used for treatment of TB, which seems nowadays just very ineffective. I mean, I don't know what they thought it was doing, but that was their treatment. They also did bloodletting and leeches that were used. So bringing that from old medical practices. And a change of climate was often prescribed. So if you could afford it, if you're a wealthy patient, you'd be sent to warmer, drier regions like the Mediterranean, the Alps, or the American Southwest.
Yeah. And there were several resorts like in Colorado, like mm-hmm. Mountain Air, things yep. like that were considered to be very good for yep. people's health and well-being, especially those suffering from tuberculosis.
Consumption. Yep.
Yep.
Now, doctors noticed that patients sometimes improved with good food, rest, and fresh air, but it wasn't systematized, as they say. So they didn't have a regimen. If you got TB, then this is what you did. They just noticed that it helped. Some doctors prescribed opium to ease the coughing and pain or alcohol, but they didn't cure TB. Now, after the sanatoriums started popping up, like the mid-1800s to mid-1900s, they kind of changed how they treated people. Sanatoriums offered structured care, strict rest, fresh air, nutritious food, and sunlight, and people there often spent hours outdoors in, quote, open-air pavilions, even in the winter. So it could be the dead of winter, and you had to spend time outside to help your TB. The philosophy was to strengthen the body so that it could fight off the disease. Then they had a more standardized treatment. So this was kind of the first signs of organized long-term medical programs for TB, and outcomes seemed to be better. You know, mortality was lower, especially if you caught it early. But sanatoriums didn't cure TB. They just prolonged your life and sometimes led to remission, but you still had it. One of the problems is they were super expensive and they were often inaccessible to poorer patients. So only the middle class and upper class could get in these sanatoriums to be treated. Before antibiotics came in, I thought this was interesting. Crescent practiced collapse therapy. They called it artificial pneumothorax. This method involved intentionally collapsing part of a patient's lung by introducing air into the pleural cavity, allowing it to rest and heal. So collapse therapy was likened to splinting a broken bone, but it had its risk and could be quite painful. Treatment at sanatoriums lasted many months or years, like I said, and they would live at Crescent for extended periods of time, and a lot of these people would die there and be buried on the site. At one point, about 1956, Crescent started transitioning to mental health and intellectual disability care. So in December of 1956, advances in medical science, specifically antibiotics, improved the treatments for TB. So these dedicated sanatoriums were not as necessary. So Crescent was then repurposed as the Lawrence F. Flick State Hospital, which specialized in mental health care and later care for patients with intellectual disabilities. Well, the campus continued to evolve in its life there. And I said the feeling like a prison was going to be interesting in a minute. And this is where, because Crescent, after the state hospital, it decided to become a state correctional institution. So this, Matt, was from 1983 to 2013.
Oh, God.
So
right up to us now.
Yep, right up to us. So by 1983, the site had closed as a hospital, and it was transferred to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Now, there was a multi-million dollar donation to it, and then it reopened as the State Correctional Institution at Crescent in 1987. Initially, it just housed medium security inmates. Well, over time, the facility gained a reputation for harsh conditions, and it housed several notorious inmates until it closed in June of 2013. All right, Matt. So let's take a second and talk about tonight's sponsor, Fume. Now, we all have a bad habit. Matt and I shared a bad habit for a while, and we've fortunately kicked those bad habits. But one of the things that really helped me was Fume. It's a flavored air device, and it has no nicotine, no vapor, no smoke, nothing like that. You just breathe through the fume, and it helps satiate some of those cravings that you have from that bad habit. And I'll tell you what, I gave one to my mother-in-law, and she loves it. She loves the crisp mint flavor, and it has helped her out. She's had that bad habit of hers for many decades, as one can imagine. But this fume has helped her break that bad habit.
And one thing that I ran into with my habit was getting on an airplane or riding in a car on a trip with people that didn't share my habit. You really understood, because that was the first thing you grabbed for. But with fume, you don't have to worry about that because, like Adam said, no vapor, no smoke, no smell.
Yep.
It's just flavored air. And you don't bother anybody, and it satisfies that urge that you may get just to kind of take the edge off. The other thing I really like about it is it feels good in your hand. It's fiddly. It's clicky. It's magnetic. And it looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks like a nice device. It can be a conversation starter maybe for somebody else that has your habit.
Right.
You can share with, because it is very eye-catching, and it takes care of that. I need something to fiddle with in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a shot. I really think that you'll be able to find a flavor out of all those flavors. I know the maple pepper was my go-to. I think it was yours too.
Yep, I love that.
But the crisp mint is also really good. So give it a shot. It may help you with that habit, whatever it is. All you have to do is head to tryfume.com. That's TRYFUM.com/tails, and use our promo code TAILES, TALES, to kick your bad habit today.
That's right. Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits. And now it's your turn. Use our code TAILES, TALES, to get a free gift with your journey pack. Head to tryfume.com. That's TRYFUM.com, and use our code TALES to claim this limited time offer today. Now, the Crescent Sanatorium, like I said, was converted to SCI Crescent, or State Correctional Institute, in 1983. It started out as medium security facility for men, and it was initially using prototype housing units that ended up influencing future prison designs across the state. Well, after the closure of the mental health facility, Crescent underwent, I told you, is multi-million dollar. Mm-hmm. It was $20.6 million in renovation in order to retrofit it as a modern medium security men's prison. Now, this is $20.6 million in 1982 money. So a little bit more today. The Department of Corrections, under Executive Order 1983-1 by Governor Dick Thornborough, is how this changed over to a correctional institute. Now, while some of the old sanatorium structures were demolished, they converted others for correctional use. They built new cell blocks there as well to house the criminals. SCI Crescent was considered a prototype prison, which, to me, I don't know if I'd want a prototype prison.
It's a prototype. Yeah. This is an experimental prison.
Yeah. You know,
it has no doors, you know.
Right.
We don't feed anyone. Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. It's just a prototype. We can go back on it if we need to.
Yep. Well, everybody died in a month. Well, crap. Yeah. Well, we gotta find a new prototype.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you live and you learn. Yeah. I mean, you
how
know.
About we this next prototype, we'll feed them, but no beds.
Yeah. They got to sleep like bats. They just hook their feet and things on the ceiling. Yep. Now, it did have a few famous prisoners, and maybe infamous prisoners is a better way to put it, during its time. Joseph Callinger, which is a little too close to my last name for my liking.
That's what I thought, too. When I first read that, I was like, ooh, this is a lot. This sounds a lot like your last name.
Yeah, it's a little too close. Just one letter difference there. But Joseph Callinger was a serial killer who murdered 3 people and terrorized families alongside his son. Well, he spent his later years at SCI Crescent until he died in 1996. There was also John DuPont. He was a millionaire heir and wrestling sponsor that was convicted for murdering Olympic champion Dave Schultz. He was sentenced at SCI Crescent, where he died in 2010. And his case ended up becoming infamous and inspired the film Foxcatcher.
Which I've never heard of.
I haven't either, but I was going to say.
I've not heard of this at all.
If you've watched it or heard of it, that John DuPont is who they're doing the movie off of. Now, the institution also housed many men that were convicted of various serious crimes over the decades of operation. So inmates at SCI Crescent followed strict routines. They had work assignments, strict meals, limited recreation, and tight controlled visits. They had specialized blocks like the restrictive housing unit that were used for solitary confinement and later mental health cases. At its height, the prison held around 1,400 inmates and employed hundreds of staff. Now, they used prolonged isolation at SCI, and it became notorious for this extensive use of solitary confinement, particularly targeting prisoners with mental illness. Inmates could be confined for 23 hours a day, sometimes for months or years at a time.
Months or years at a time?
Mm-hmm. Yep. 23 hours a day for months or years if they deemed you a, quote, problem. But like they said, a lot of these problem cases were people that had mental health issues. Conditions in these units were harsh, and early solitary blocks were steel-doored and cage-like, and overcrowding led to repurposing the oldest and worst cells for mentally ill prisoners. Now, federal investigations by the Department of Justice and watchdog organizations actually found that SCI Crescent staff frequently responded to behaviors caused by mental illness with punitive measures. So these punitive measures included strapping inmates to beds or concrete slabs for hours at a time. They would use tasers and pepper spray on prisoners that were already restrained. So, if you need to control the situation, if there's like a riot or a prisoner is fighting you, then yes, tasers, pepper spray. Right, but if you've already got the prisoner restrained,
leave him alone.
Yeah, don't tase them. They actually forced prisoners to sleep on bare cement. They would restrict showers, reading materials, visits with family or friends, and access to warm food using, quote, food loaf as punishment.
Food loaf? Is this Big Brother? This sounds like something on the TV show.
Right. Yeah, here, eat your food loaf. Yeah. Ashley watches that, and
we've watched it. We watched it for years.
I usually leave the room because I don't like the drama.
Oh yeah. Sometimes it makes me a little uncomfortable. But
yeah,
that
the drama
food
makes
loaf
me
sounds
real
like
uncomfortable.
Something they would have to eat on that show.
Right, like in the have nots room or something. Yeah. You got to eat food loaf.
Yep.
It's like real bad meatloaf. Mental health care needs were often treated as disciplinary violations rather than medical issues. So they would respond with what they called aversive responses, punishing symptoms like people shouting or you know, self-harming or something.
Yeah.
They would have punitive measures for that. There was a lack of appropriate care that resulted in repeated acts of self-harm, high suicide rates, and widespread psychological distress in the prison. These issues became so acute that the DOJ ruled the prison's practices violated constitutional rights. The prison was officially closed on June 30th, 2013, with the state citing high maintenance costs and aging infrastructure, plus mounting legal and public pressure over these abuses. Now, since the closure, the site has been partly repurposed for hydroponic farming by Big House Produce, which is funny. I like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of it remains abandoned. There's tours there that now focus on both the haunted reputation and the dark legacy of abuses inside.
So you mentioned there are people that are still living that mm-hmm. were actual patients, inmates is what it really sounds more like.
Yeah.
At Crescent. Most of them were children at the time, or teenagers. And a man named Chuck Felton, who was living in Lake Hills, Texas, was a former resident of Crescent, and he started a website so that people that were also former residents there could come together and share some of their memories of being
there.
That's
cool.
Yeah. And he started this website, and he says he was 17 and a senior at Towanda Valley High School in Towanda, Pennsylvania. He contracted tuberculosis and spent 16 months in the state TB sanatorium. He said, one of the reasons I'm documenting this event is to give people some idea of what the experience was like back in the old days, way back in 1955. And he has a picture of himself, and he says, this is me standing outside in the Pennsylvania snow with the hospital building behind me. And, I mean, he's a good-looking kid. You know, he's tall. He says he was 6'3". Weighed about 185 pounds, and you look behind him and you see this building and you're yeah. like, geez, how yeah. Awful would it have been to have been a 17-year-old kid? You think back to being 17 and what you did and how everything was so exciting. I mean, I got a 16-year-old in, you know, living with me, and I've had three that have gone through this, you know, at this age, it's a tough age, I'm telling you, but everything is new, you know, everything is an experience. And imagine being essentially just held prisoner
mm-hmm.
in this place.
Yeah. You're learning who you are
and
how to be, and to be then put in this sanatorium during those formative years has got to screw you up.
Yeah. Now, in the information here, at least on the initial introduction, he's not slamming this joint, mm-hmm. but looking a little bit deeper in it, a news channel did a story on Mr. Felton several years ago, and we're discussing this website. And they tracked down a lot of the folks that were contributors to his site and had their stories on there. And one of the things that really struck me when I was watching this video was a little old lady, little sweet granny looking lady. And she says, when I think back of my days at Crescent, I think torture. That is what came out of this woman's mouth. And I felt like if this was my grandmother and I heard her say something like this, it would be like a knife in my stomach.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I'd be figuring out who to beat.
Oh,
like
it was horrific. And I think what was even worse about it was the fact that she said it almost matter of factly, like mm-hmm. this was just the way it was. And I thought,
yeah, and
how
everybody knew it,
how horrible for not just her, but for all these people that were there. And the reason I bring this up is to give you an idea of what these people really felt and the emotion that had to have been tied to this place. When we talk about poltergeists, there's always some connection to like a young adolescent female
mm-hmm.
in almost every story. And, you know, they tie it to all of the hormones and the emotion and the roller coaster that you feel going through puberty at 13, 14 and all that. And they felt like this may manifest these poltergeist disturbances. So considering that and the idea that people already kind of think in that direction, now cram hundreds of these teenagers,
yeah.
kids, yep. into a place where they're trying to grow and learn. I mean, this would be like the worst coming of age movie ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Stand By Me, but they're in a sanatorium. I'm like,
yeah,
God.
Right.
And
the Stand By Me.
Yeah. And he mentions that, you know, people that lived at the sand. So you take that into consideration when you think about why would this place be haunted? And to me, that's probably enough.
I don't really, there was never a time while I was reading any of this history or anything that I went, I wonder why this place might be haunted.
That's right.
Like in reading all this stuff, I went, I know why this place is haunted.
Exactly.
100%.
And visitors to Crescent, they have reported seeing apparitions of former prisoners and staff, hearing disembodied voices and footsteps, and feeling sudden drops in temperature, which are common for these type of hauntings. But some have claimed to have been physically touched or pushed by unseen entities. There we are again with the dadgum pushing. Don't push me.
Yeah.
I'm not really cool with you touching me, but sure as hell don't push me. Okay.
Yeah. There was one of our listeners in our Facebook group just like yesterday mentioned that she felt a pat on her back, mm-hmm. thought it was her husband, looked over and he's dead asleep.
Oh God. Yeah.
And my response was there is nothing creepier than actually physical touch from an unseen entity.
Yeah.
And then when it becomes violent, mm-hmm. like pushing, that yeah. takes it up one more notch.
Pushing and hair pulling and all that kind of stuff. Like I don't.
Yep.
I mean, and this is from me. I've had more paranormal experiences in the homes that I've lived in than the right. average bear. Okay.
Yep. A lot more than me.
I've never been touched, pushed, nothing. Okay. I've heard stuff, seen stuff, experienced some stuff. I've never actually had a physical interaction and I don't want to. Okay. Let's just make that clear.
One.
If any of the ghosts that live out here in the studio are listening, don't touch me. Okay.
And no, slap Matt on the back of the head. If you can hear me, slap Matt on the back of the head on camera.
And for those of y'all watching the video, if you ever wonder, there are times when I will turn around, Adam will be talking, I will turn around and look behind me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you see me do that, it is because I have heard something behind me.
Yep.
And will look. And I know what's back behind me. So when I hear a sound that I wouldn't expect, I'm going to turn around and look. No one can get in here without me hearing them coming in. So right. I know there's right. nobody like out there. And if any of my family decided to come in downstairs, I would know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's been times it's been loud enough that I have heard it
right
through the mic. I've heard it on my end from his room. So.
We had it happen a few weeks ago, and I saw Adam's eyes go like, what the hell was that? Yeah.
My first thought was Amanda had walked in, and then I realized pretty quickly, since you didn't say anything, it wasn't her.
Right, right.
And then I was like, oh, no.
So, yeah, physical touch at Crescent.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Now, visitors to the children's ward, which was built in the 1930s, and it was built initially to treat children under six with tuberculosis. Okay. And that area also once housed the morgue.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But good. They have people that visit there have reported these like childlike spirits. So, you know, they play and they tug on your pants leg and you roll
like
balls and stuff. But they've also experienced more aggressive entities, shadow figures. People mm-hmm. have witnessed shadow figures, and they have reported that they chase visitors down the hall.
Oh, wow.
Chasing. That's another thing. Ain't too keen on that. I don't run
nope.
unless I'm chased. So if you chase mm-hmm. me and make me run, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, right. Well,
go ahead.
The thing that gets me is, like, you hear stories of these people that they go to haunted places and they see an entity, a shadow figure, a blob,
yep.
something
yep.
like that. Okay, that is unnerving. But then they tell stories of this blob whoom, coming at them. Dude, do you know how fast I would pull an old cartoon move and split if this dark entity just shot at me from across the room?
Yeah.
That man.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Creep you out.
Yeah.
Creep you out.
Don't chase me down a hall.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. Bring the sage after them if they do yeah. that.
They have captured what they call antagonistic EVPs.
Mm.
Stuff like, you know, beyond the get out, you know, yeah. stuff like come at me, bro, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Catch me outside. How about that?
That would be the greatest.
Can you just imagine listening back to an EVP you got there and it was like, catch me outside. And you're like, what?
Some people have reported an entity that will mimic visitors' sounds and voices. Yeah, that's super creepy.
Yeah, that ain't cool.
Now, other areas of Crescent that are of interest to paranormal investigators and enthusiasts is the old administration building, which was once a part of the tuberculosis sanatorium and is the oldest building on the campus. Now, guards have reported seeing full-bodied apparitions on the second floor, despite the building being empty. And the tunnels that scatter throughout the entire property and connect virtually every building are also a kind of a hotbed for paranormal activity. No joke. This place has got tunnels underground that connect all of the buildings. And if you go and look at photos of this place, it's huge. I mean, it is huge. So, yeah, that's exactly where I would expect to encounter some you know, some creepy spirits is in these freaking tunnels.
Yep. Negative entities. They seem to basements, tunnels. They like the lower down areas.
Yeah. It says, since being open to the public, the tunnels have become known for strange sounds echoing through the darkness. Yeah. And the sounds range from unexplained bangs and knocks to distant voices. Investigators have also noted that motion sensors will be triggered by unseen forces when they're placed in the tunnels.
Hmm.
So those like REM pods, you know, that will light up when something gets closer. There's several videos online that you can see where they set these pods up in the tunnels, and then, you know, they'll be trying to record some EVPs, and they'll get responses. These entities will come closer and then move away from these REM pods almost on command, or at least at request.
Yeah.
So that these pods will light up and there's nobody even close, you know, and I caught one video that was really short, but it had, a REM pod set up. I'm not 100% sure it was in the tunnels. I just assumed it was, but they were videoing the REM pod. So they weren't even there. They just had a camera up watching the REM pods and it would light up. So there's no movement at all. And something's
and
picking
being
up
in the tunnels. Being in the tunnels, you're not going to get like, oh, there was wind blowing in through the door.
You're underground.
Caused something to blow in front of it. You're very still area there.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's weird.
Now, Building F served as the mental health housing ward, and people have reported phantom footsteps in Building F, and they've even been recorded. Building E housed the general population, and mysterious sounds have also been reported there. Previous paranormal investigations have yielded recordings of unexplained knocks and tapping sounds all throughout Building E. And some spirits in these areas, in like Building F and E, have said to harass female visitors, with many visitors claiming to be touched or having their hair pulled.
I don't like that.
And the hair pulling thing, I've often wondered. I got no hair to get pulled. If you get close enough to me to pull my beard, I'm probably going to fight.
That's too close, yeah.
But so, you know, ladies that have longer hair, you know, that I've often wondered, though, is the hair pulling thing an aggression move, or is it, I'm trying so hard to generate enough energy to let you know that I'm here, that translates to, you know, I grabbed your hair for a second while you were walking, mm-hmm. and it comes across as I'm pulling your hair. I'm just trying to get your attention.
Yeah. We talked about that at one point because I heard Jay from Ghost Hunters talk about this, and it made me think about it. If you've got an entity next to you that's trying to get your attention and they poke you, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. They poke you, nothing happens. You don't notice it. They're trying to increase their energy to get you to notice they're there. And if they do it hard enough for you to finally feel it, it might feel like a punch.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a shove, and you know, something like that.
And they don't mean to be aggressive and hurt you, but that's just what it took to get you to notice them. Mm-hmm. And so not all of these are necessarily evil or mean.
Yeah.
But they come across that way for sure.
The only thing I would say that we've researched that seems to be predominantly dark entity or evil related would be the scratching.
Yeah.
You know, the scratches always seem to be associated with, you know, a negative entity, but the pushes and the pulls and that kind of stuff, I'm not so sure. I'm not saying that they all fit into that category, but I think researchers are on to something there. I think Jay's got a point that if you're frustrated as a spirit trying to get the attention of a human there, you know, it may come across because you have to be, you know, so over the top just to get enough energy to actually make your presence known that it feels like, something pushed me. You know, it's not pushing you down the stairs necessarily. It's just trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
Not always. We've had some places that people feel like they get pushed down the stairs.
Yep.
So let's talk about building B. This is where the solitary confinement cells were located. Now, guess who haunts the solitary confinement cells? Our old buddy, Adam's uncle, Joseph Callinger.
Too close for
the
comfort.
The serial killer is said to haunt Building B. Now, Callinger died in the prison while serving out his life sentence after he suffered a heart attack in 1996. Now, disembodied voices and moans are also said to be common in Building B, as well as throughout the complex, and slamming doors have been heard in a lot of the buildings. And it is important to note, with some of these places, there are specific areas that you can go to and the activity is kind of, it's here. Okay.
Right.
There, or here and here, this floor, this ward, you know, other places, not so much, but investigators say that the entire complex at Crescent seems to be fair game for these spirits, that there's there's no place that goes untouched when it comes to paranormal activity.
So you can go anywhere in this and Callinger might show up.
Well, I don't know if they officially say that it's him, but the voices, the slamming doors and that stuff, footsteps, it's common everywhere. And some investigators have even suggested that the door slams have been in response to certain questions. So either questions that maybe agitated a spirit, or this was their way of communicating their presence, you know. So take that for what you will. Slamming door, also kind of creepy, especially let's say you were down in these tunnels and all of a sudden you hear a door slam way down this dark ass tunnel and like, we're not going that way anymore. You know, we're going to stay right here or turn around.
There's another way out, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Go that way.
Like, I'm not going in the tunnels.
No, I don't think
The chapel, which was built in 1914, it was a place of worship for both patients and inmates during Crescent's operation. Now, they say that the church-like feel of the chapel is tainted by a dark energy that moves around the campus, but it seems to be predominantly found in the chapel and in the tunnels. Now, wouldn't it be crazy if, because we don't think about a spirit like this not being able to just go where it wants, you know, but what if, you know, a spirit or entity is tied to this place and it has access to all of the other areas because of this tunnel system? You wouldn't think that a physical barrier would necessarily, you know, keep a spirit from moving from one place to the next. But what if it does? I mean, we don't know all the rules.
Don't know how it works,
but you know, an entity could, if you're doing an investigation and you're doing some stuff in the chapel and then later on you're in Building B and something happens there, you're kind of like, well, is this the same thing we were dealing with over in the chapel? Maybe.
Did it follow me over here? Yeah. Well, you know, we have talked about some spirits being tied, you know, to a house.
Right.
And they don't really leave that house. Well, if you have a tunnel connected to this house, basically, it would be just a continuation of that house.
Right.
So it's not like it has to move out of that living space or unliving space to move to the next building.
Exactly.
It just is basically an extended part of that. So it would theoretically help if they were tied to physical locations. It would help expand that haunting area, I guess.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're listening and you think, Matt, how do we know it's a dark entity? You know, that would be really creepy if the chapel was haunted by a dark entity. But how would we really know? Well, some visitors have reported seeing an entity with claws perched on the chapel's ceiling.
Nah.
And it follows them around the property.
See, as soon as you say entity with claws, that,
Some have even witnessed it crawling on the ceiling and following them out like it's on a piggyback ride.
See, dude, we've talked about it before. They call them creepers in a lot of areas where they run across the ceiling or they crawl on the floor. If something does not move in a human manner, it's way creepier.
Oh, yeah.
And so now you've got this clawed entity crawling across the ceiling.
Yeah.
I'm out, dude.
We did another hospital one time that had something like that that would crawl, chase you, and it would crawl on the ceiling. I can't remember which one it was, but it was creepy, too.
Yeah, it's the same theory. It's not moving in a human-like fashion. Yeah. It's moving in a fashion that we as a society have said is demonic. And so then that's what pops into your head, even if it's not.
Yeah.
That's what pops into your
head.
It's
like when you see the girl in the movie The Ring, you know, crawling out, the way she moves, it's like, I don't like it.
Yep.
Now, visitors, investigators, staff say that the energy within the chapel will shift suddenly. And this causes the doors to slam shut. And some visitors have reported experiencing uncontrollable shaking and exhaustion. You know, just like all of my energy was just sucked out of my body.
Yeah.
And, you know, or they just begin this just violent shaking and they can't stop until they get out. But like I said, there are, I guess, hotter spots than others in Crescent, but it doesn't really seem that anywhere is off limits. Visitors often report that they feel like they're being watched while they're touring the grounds. Others will say they feel like a ghostly entity is following them as they go through certain buildings. And most of the time, these entities are invisible, but there have been a ton of people that have reported seeing shadowy figures all around Crescent, both moving shadows and stationary apparitions have been reported, you know, from, you know, visitors, tour guides, you know, paranormal investigators alike have all collected. So, you know, overall, you know, Crescent is, it does appear to be extraordinarily active and, you know, would be a pretty interesting visit. Ghost Hunters did a show there. I didn't see the episode. I usually will watch Ghost Hunters. There's a few that I don't watch just because I don't really care for the manner that they investigate. What I enjoy about the Ghost Hunter show is they really seem, at least on the show, to make an effort to debunk what quote unquote evidence they have found.
Yeah.
You know, they really do try instead of immediately just assuming that every door slam, every spirit box sound, you know, every, oh, I think something touched me or whatever was automatically a spirit, automatically an entity or a demon or whatever. Instead of sitting down and going, okay, this is what happened. This is what we recorded, or this is what we felt. And it, you know, where we were in the building could have been this, could have been that. And I've even seen them try, you know, let's see, can, you know, what if we mimic a wind blowing through here, or you go down there and make that sound and see if it sounds the same, you know? So I give them a little credit because they at least do that. I appreciate it. I think to me, it makes the show more enjoyable. So I tend to take what they do with a little bit more truthfulness, but
yeah,
you know, even still, it's a TV show. So
the other thing that I like about them over some other shows is most shows they'll have an investigator and they'll say, if you're here, please make a sound.
Yeah.
And then you get a sound and they go, ah, and scream and whatever. You know, it's like, well, you just asked them to do that. You believe in the paranormal, right, supposedly, right, and you're here.
Don't be shocked at this, you know?
Right. And so Ghost Hunters, they'll say, hey, you know, if you're here, make a noise. And they'll get a knock or something. They're like, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. And they don't freak out for drama, you know? And I think that's all it is these shows have to be overly dramatic, and I don't like it. I like the
at the
true investigation.
At the end of the day, it's entertainment. So
yeah, it's still a TV show,
you know?
So
like we said, the TV show where investigators show up and go, eh, nothing happened. Nobody would watch that show.
Okay. Yeah, right. I sat here for 3 hours and nothing happened. So there you go.
Yeah. I would appreciate somebody saying that, but I'm not going to watch that week in and week out.
Right. So, I'm not going to watch an hour and a half of that
in
an episode.
Maybe we've got some listeners that are familiar with Crescent, that, you know, Pennsylvania, that area of Pennsylvania. They know what it is. You might have even been there. Lord, if you knew somebody that, you know, was there as a patient, you know, we would love to hear any other stories that you have from the Crescent Sanatorium. And the best place to share those with us is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. We have so many people in there, and they, like Adam said, you know, we get listeners that share experiences all the time, and it's fascinating. I mean, they are some of the best things when listeners share, hey, this happened to me yesterday. I mean, we really love it. But we love the dad jokes. We love the interaction. It's fantastic. Don't forget to go to our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. Hey, look, Christmas is around the corner. If you've got someone on your list that would like a Graveyard Tales coffee mug or a t-shirt, hey, now's a good time. We do not make really any money off of the sale of that stuff, but we appreciate it. Cause if you go to work and you're drinking a Graveyard Tales coffee mug and somebody goes, what's Graveyard Tales? It helps us because you're sharing the show. So we appreciate it, you know, immensely. But on our website, you can even listen to the show. But that is where you can become a patron, and we appreciate everyone who has donated to the show. It really helps Adam and I keep it going at a quality that we can be proud of and our listeners can enjoy. So thank you for that. Am I leaving anything out? I feel like all of our little tags at the end keep getting longer. I think that's it. So, all right. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.